We will call this meeting to order. This is the Wednesday, January 21st meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Committee. And members, today we're going to receive an overview from the Department of Public Safety. This is a report on Minnesota's preparedness for an oil transportation incident. Members may recall that this report is a function of the law that we passed last year. This is the second of such reports that we're hearing about in this committee. The first, of course, was on from the Department of Transportation on crossings, oil train crossings through our community and where we might prioritize those. This is an overview of our preparedness, local jurisdiction, state, as well as the oil transportation companies, both pipelines and railroads. So I appreciate agency for coming forward. Mr. Donaski, I'll let you kick us off and introduce the folks that you brought with you and proceed as you see fit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the committee for having us here this afternoon. For the record, my name is Mark Donaski. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Public Safety. To my right is Mr. Joe Kelly, who's the Director of Homeland Security Emergency Management. And to my left is the State Fire Marshal Bruce West. If there are questions a little bit deeper than just the overview, we have the gentleman here, as well as some support staff from DPS to answer any more technical questions. So I'll move right ahead, Mr. Chair, with your permission, and go over a brief overview of the study.
And Mr. Donaski, what is your pleasure? Would you like folks to interrupt you along the way, or would you like us to hold our questions until you're finished?
Mr. Chair, that's entirely up to you.
All right, we'll interrupt you along the way then.
First, the purpose of the study. In 2014, as part of a comprehensive bill on railroad and pipeline safety, the Minnesota Legislature directed the Department of Public Safety to prepare a report on incident preparedness in both the public and private sectors related to the transportation of oil by rail or pipeline. DPS's Division of Homeland Security Emergency Management, which I'll refer to as HSEM most of the time, contracted with the Management and Analysis Division, sometimes referred to as MAD, from the Minnesota Department of Administration to draft a report and to help develop recommendations for DPS's consideration. The legislation specifies that the report must contain, at a minimum, summarize the preparedness and emergency response framework in the state, provide an assessment of costs and needs of fire departments and other emergency first responders for training and equipment to respond to discharge or spill incidents involving the transportation of oil, develop a comprehensive public and private response capacity inventory that, to the extent feasible, includes statewide identification of major emergency response equipment, emergency staging locations, mutual aid agreements, and capacities across industries involved in transportation and storage of oil. Provide information analysis that forms the basis for the allotment of funds that were issued under Minnesota Statute 299A55, which were the assessments in the general revenue appropriation to the Department of Public Safety from last year. The report helps develop benchmarks or assessment criteria for the evaluation of response preparedness and funding of the other report that's to be completed by January of 2017 to assist in long-range oil transportation incident preparedness planning and to make recommendations for any legislative changes. A little bit about the scope of the study. Given the legislative direction, this study focuses on public safety preparedness and response to an oil transportation incident involving railroads or pipelines in Minnesota. The study does not provide analysis or recommendations on prevention activities, environmental mitigation and cleanup, infrastructure development such as transportation or health system infrastructure, or the relative merits of the different types of modes of oil transportation in the state. MAD developed a research plan with DPS and conducted research for this study from August 2014 through December of 2014. Management analysis used several data sources to provide responses to the legislative requirements. MAD conducted review analysis of information on state and federal laws, state and federal agencies, approaches developed by other states and provinces, and research and analysis and guidance from experts in this field of emergency preparedness and response. MAD also conducted focused literature review using research databases, government reports, public websites, and information from interviewees. They did comprehensive interviews with subject matter experts, including rail and pipeline company representatives, state agency representatives, and associations of first responders and local governments. A survey of fire department chiefs, sheriffs, police department chiefs, and emergency managers in jurisdictions that are potentially affected by the oil transportation incidents was also conducted. They also conducted focus interviews with state and local elected officials in areas potentially affected by an oil transportation incident. Some of the key findings from the report. Oil and hazardous material incidents are one of many risks in Minnesota. Other threats, risks, and hazards are also of serious concern to emergency management officials. Oil is transported across Minnesota via rail and pipeline routes across large parts of the state. Almost any area of the state could be directly or indirectly affected by an oil transportation incident. In recent years, however, there have been relatively few hazardous materials or oil transportation incidents in Minnesota. Oil transportation has become a salient issue in Minnesota and elsewhere for several reasons. Increased production and distribution of oil from North Dakota and Alberta, catastrophic incidents involving rail and pipeline transport of oil, particularly recent derailments and fires involving shale oil from the Bakken fields, and findings from federal regulators that Bakken crude oil is highly volatile. Community stakeholders, including emergency management officials, elected officials, and the public, have expressed their concerns about rail transportation at community forums in recent months. Public safety aspects of oil transportation incidents are among their concerns. That said, focused interviews with elected officials as part of this study indicated that constituents as a whole may not view preparedness for a possible oil transportation incident as a significant issue, given the other priorities in their communities. Minnesota's Preparedness and Response Framework. Minnesota takes an all-hazard approach to emergency preparedness. State and local planners consider potential threats, risks, and hazards, and plan accordingly. Under state and federal law, Minnesota has a comprehensive framework that would also apply to an oil transportation incident. Railroad and pipeline companies are ultimately responsible for responding to an emergency involving the substance they transport, but local first responders and state agencies also play a role. Minnesota's statutory framework places an emphasis on coordination and collaboration across governments and sectors. The new statute provisions established in 2014 outline specific responsibilities for rail companies that transport crude oil, including established response times and requirements. Capacity to respond to protect public safety in an oil transportation incident involves a combination of components, including equipment, trained personnel, emergency plans, mutual aid agreements, and exercises to test preparedness. Rail and pipeline companies maintain that they are ready and able to respond to an oil transportation incident, noting that they have their own firefighting and spill response resources in Minnesota and other states and have contractual relationships with other responders. Though companies identified specialty firefighting resources in their equipment and contractors lists, much of the resources described by companies are focused on the environmental response to an oil incident rather than public safety. Homeland Security Emergency Management coordinates hazardous materials regional response teams that can provide assistance in an oil transportation emergency. The state has 10 chemical assessment teams in Minnesota. These teams have trained personnel and specialized equipment to assist local incident commanders in recognizing and identifying a hazard so local responders can respond appropriately. The state also has 2 emergency response teams that can take additional mitigation action to protect communities from the effects of an oil or other spill. And I believe among your handouts, you have a handout that describes what CAT teams are, as they're referred to. Those are the chemical assessment teams, and the ERT teams, the emergency response teams. A clear understanding, there's some misconception that these teams are kind of super fire departments that respond, and that's not what their primary responsibility is. Excuse me. State agencies, including the Department of Public Safety, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Minnesota Department of Transportation, can provide expert advice to local governments if there's a hazardous materials or oil transportation incident. If environmental cleanup is necessary because of a spill, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency would ensure that the responsible party takes necessary action. Minnesota's current capacity to respond to an oil transportation incident. MAD found that local government mutual aid infrastructure in Minnesota is well developed, and most counties and cities have all-hazard emergency plans that would apply to an oil transportation incident. First responders surveyed for this study, however, are relatively unfamiliar with private sector resources and regional response team resources available.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wicker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question regarding the responsible party, is there a statutory threshold on liability coverage?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wicker, not to my knowledge, we'll find out that answer. Are you asking about coverage that transportation companies are required to have in case there is a spill that results in a liability to them?
Yes.
Senator Wicker.
And if I'm assuming there's some threshold, and then your impression as to whether that is adequate. But you could follow up.
Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. We'll take that back. I suspect it may be a question we need to consult with the Department of Commerce on as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Continuing with Minnesota's current capacity, Experts consulted for this study indicated that local governments generally do not have the equipment or personnel to respond to a significant oil transportation incident, such as a large spill or fire. Some emphasized, however, that local governments are not the primary responsible party for an oil transportation incident. The rail and pipeline companies are responsible. First responders reported access to some type of firefighting and spill response equipment locally or through mutual aid agreements. Information resources such as information on train and pipeline contents and expert advice on appropriate response actions were available to most first responder surveys, however, not to all. About half of the first responders surveyed reported that the departments have staff members who have received training on how to respond to an oil transportation incident. However, only about one-third indicated that they have participated in a preparedness exercise since July of 2013. Moving on to discussing developing Minnesota's capacity to respond to an oil transportation incident, the study discusses perceptions and preparedness, perceptions of preparedness. As a whole, first responders surveyed for the study rated their area's preparedness for an oil transportation incident as what the report refers to as below moderate, ranking at 2.6 on a scale from 1 to 5. None of the responders rated their area's preparedness as excellent. Analysis of data from the first responder survey provides support for a common sense emergency management perspective. Organizations that are familiar with hazards and are aware of the resources, that engage in planning, training, and exercise, and that have resources available to respond will indeed consider themselves to be better prepared for an incident. In the area of equipment, the majority of first responders surveyed said that they did not know what additional equipment or resources are necessary to respond to an oil transportation incident. The relatively few that did provide information regarding additional resources generally said that they needed firefighting foam and related equipment. Experts from a variety of perspectives agreed that in some circumstances, the appropriate response to a significant oil fire is to let the fire burn out or down considerably before attacking it. The correct public safety response in that situation is to clear the area, take defensive actions to prevent life, property, and environmental damage, and consider whether evacuation is warranted. For that reason, interviewees often warned against focusing on procuring equipment as a means of increasing preparedness. Additionally, some experts discussed the lessons communities have learned through other large-scale efforts at increasing preparedness through the purchasing of equipment. They found that the equipment may not be used frequently. Local governments must maintain the equipment and then continually train staff on its use. Some surveyed first responders offered the suggestion that regional or multi-county agreements regarding equipment, and in some cases personnel, would help increase preparedness. And the majority of state, local government, and responder associations advised that identifying and sharing resources is indeed the best approach. Coordination and collaboration are significant areas for capacity development in the state. Survey questions regarding familiarity and mutual aid agreements revealed a need for improved connections between first responders, private companies, and state agencies. A few interviewees indicated that more collaboration and coordination are key to preparedness. Adding resources without coordination would not be helpful. Regarding the 2014 legislation, that legislation provided direction and funding to state agencies to enhance preparedness. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has reviewed railroad company response plans and the results of desk drills and is communicating with the railroad companies regarding those issues. HSEM is coordinating and conducting awareness-level training across the state for local first responders. And I believe, Mr. Chair, there's also a handout that was given to you that highlights a little bit of the activities that have taken place, at least on the Department of Public Safety side, regarding the requirements of the legislation and how we move forward with those requirements. Funding for enhancing preparedness. The established railroad and pipeline safety account will allow expansion of the preparedness efforts. A new emergency response team has been formed in Moorhead, and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and HSEM are engaged in preparedness activities. The funds available in the railroad and pipeline safety account would, while the account is funded, support a preparedness effort larger than the state's regional plan review program, but smaller than the state's comprehensive nuclear preparedness program. Most interviewees recommended increasing training as a priority for resources, including making it easier for local responders to attend training and participate in exercises, offsetting the costs of running simulation and drills, expanding the limited number available trainers in state agencies, and ensuring that the training programs can be sustained over a long period of time. A few interviewees recommended caution and prudence in expanding funding, urging changes underway currently, in particular regarding the training that's going on, be given time to work. It was not feasible to develop specific assessments of cost for training equipment for local first responders to be prepared for an oil transportation incident. local first responders and emergency managers are in the best position to assess their own capacity, but they do not have sufficient information to identify what additional resources are available and needed to respond to an oil transportation incident. Counties and regions in the state are currently engaged in capacity assessment for their emergency management programs. When planners and first responders are more fully aware of the risks of oil transportation incidents and resources available, the capability assessment information will provide a basis for a more comprehensive assessment of the costs and needs. In the interim, a means of using the funds for the railroad and pipeline safety account is necessary. A regional approach for funding requests would encourage cross-jurisdictional and cross-sector collaboration, and an emphasis on training would address many of the issues raised by participants in the study. Evaluating the response preparedness.
Mr. Donaski.
Mr. Chair.
On bullet point number three, when will that assessment, that needs assessment or that analysis be completed? Do we know?
Those are the county regional assessments.
Mr. Chair, those are being done at the regional level. I would anticipate that probably within the next year, those assessments would be completed. One of the keys to that is going to be an exercise program that allows them to evaluate how they are capable of responding now and identify the gaps and the things that they need. So in a year, certainly, of course, by the time the second report is required in 2017.
So they'll be conducting exercises and then evaluating and measuring how well those go?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, sir, that is
all
correct.
Right. Great, thank you. Can we be notified of when those occur, and/or is there going to be some media attention? I'd like to pay pretty close attention to those exercises when they happen.
Mr. Chair, you're speaking specifically about the exercises?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, as we move further into the report, that is one of the major findings, responsibility for the Department of Public Safety and the Pollution Control, that we move forward with more significant exercises, more hands-on exercises, and if the committee would like to be advised of those exercises, we'd be more than happy to share that information with you.
Great, yeah, and maybe for whomever is interested, we could go watch or go to the post-mortem evaluation or receive some sort of post-mortem, you know, kind of in real-time evaluation of what we think of how they came out. That would be great.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and as we move forward, larger-scale exercises that take into account, in many cases, these incidents would have mutual aid, and they would be in a region or larger group of jurisdictions. The build-up to those exercises takes some time, and Mr. Kelly can certainly elaborate on that. It typically starts off with a conversation about what the exercise might look like, talking to the people that might be involved, moving through desktop and tabletop exercises, and then moving forward. So it is a kind of a long process before you actually get down to the boots-on-the-ground exercise.
Great. Thank you. All right. Continue.
Mr. Chair. Evaluating response preparedness, subject matter experts and research literature consulted for the study indicate that there are great difficulties associated with evaluating preparedness for an oil transportation incident or other emergency. Plan, review, exercises, and drills are primary ways to check an organization or area's preparedness. But these activities alone would not allow the state to know if recent changes and enhancement for preparedness were actually having an impact. A results-based accountability approach can provide measures to evaluate a program by generating responses to three basic questions. How much did we do? How well did we do it? And is anyone better off for it? Using that approach, MAD developed preliminary performance measures for evaluating preparedness, but they recommend that these should be vetted by subject matter experts and other stakeholders before they're adopted. There were other issues that were brought up regarding developing Minnesota's capacity to respond from the interviews and the stakeholders. Several concerns were identified by participants in this study that are beyond the scope of this report, but may warrant additional attention and research, such as transportation infrastructure and health system preparedness. Many participants discussed the importance of preventing or mitigating an oil transportation incident by improving tank cars and tracks, routing pipelines and rail routes away from population centers or environmentally sensitive areas. Participants familiar with the healthcare system emphasized the need for additional planning for incidents involving casualties and described potential problems associated with the limited number of dedicated burn beds in Minnesota. Mr. Chair, from the study, there were six recommendations identified. Recommendation number one is increased awareness about oil transportation incidents, then develop additional capacity. DPS is engaged in a comprehensive approach to expand awareness about oil transportation incidents and include conducting the awareness level training already underway for the fire departments and other responders, developing online resources for public and first responders, such as awareness materials and training videos, developing guidance for first responders and local governments on the response to an oil incident, including assessment and evacuation protocols. This initial focus on building awareness more consistently across the state should be augmented by plans for large-scale drill and hands-on training for those jurisdictions that are prepared for those activities. Ultimately, DPS recommends expanding the state's training program to support more hands-on training and exercises related to emergency preparedness in general. Recommendation number two is to connect funding for training equipment to a regional coordination. DPS recommends that resources from the Railroad and Pipeline Safety account be used first to support the training program underway at the state level. Local emergency managers are in the best position to assess their area's capabilities and needs, but many need additional information about the risks and available resources related to oil transportation incidents. Additionally, DPS agrees with the findings of the study related to the need for increased coordination and collaboration. DPS has developed a process for organizations to apply for training or equipment funding available in the Railroad Pipeline Safety Account. We would encourage formation and expansion of multi-county or regional collaborative groups to identify and share those resources. Whenever possible, existing organizations, joint power authorities, or public-private partnerships should be utilized. To support the formation of these collaborative groups, agencies participating in the State Agency Response Committee, particularly the Department of Public Safety and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, should develop guidelines, model charters, and other templates. These state agencies should also develop a recommended evaluation format for these groups to use. Because the information from these groups will be valuable to the state's planning and preparedness efforts, DPS intends to investigate the possibility of reimbursing members of these groups under state statutes regarding advisory boards. DPS intends to administer funds in a similar way as HSEM grant programs with established regional advisory committees as the funnel for those applications. Based on the information in this study, DPS recommends that funding priorities be set in this order: training, including reimbursement for associated staffing costs, planning and coordination, and equipment that will most likely be used by first responders during an oil transportation incident, such as air mining equipment. Applications for funding for large-scale response equipment should include a rigorous assessment of local and regional resources and risks. Recommendation number three, delay significant changes to the Railroad and Pipeline Safety Account related allocations. DPS recommends that the funding allocation and assessment be maintained as is until the next report required under the 2014 legislation. At that time, there will be more information regarding the state's preparedness efforts and the impacts of the changes underway. Future funding determinations should ensure the preparedness efforts are sustainable. For example, funding for the new emergency response team will lapse at the end of fiscal year 2017. DPS further intends to prepare and publicize a plan for use of the funding allocated under Minnesota Statute 299A55, using information from this report, an initial assessment of training efforts underway, as well as the input from the Fire Safety Advisory Committee and the Technical Advisory Committee. Recommendation number four is to develop a state-level program evaluation approach to assess hazardous materials preparedness activities. In order to effectively evaluate the state's actions under the 2014 legislation, DPS recommends that state develop a program evaluation process and framework for hazardous materials incident preparedness. Agencies participating in the State Agency Responders Committee, once again, particularly the Department of Public Safety and the Pollution Control Agency, should jointly develop a list of priority results for preparedness activities and establish timelines and measures to show progress towards those results. DPS recommends that information on these results be incorporated into the annual report to the legislature on hazardous materials and oil discharge readiness, which is submitted now to the legislature on an annual basis. DPS also recommends that these state agencies agree to collect and share data as needed under the evaluation process, and that these agencies jointly request railroad companies provide a report on their coordinated efforts required under Minnesota Statute 115E. DPS further recommends that resources from the Railroad Pipeline Safety Account be used to partially offset any cost of the evaluation, with the remaining cost shared among the responder agencies. Recommendation number five is to enhance existing databases or develop new databases to provide more comprehensive information about response resources across the state. DPS intends to identify whether its existing resource database system can be modified to include additional information regarding resources from state agencies, private sector organizations, and local governments, including but not limited to resources needed to respond to an oil transportation incident. The existing database is accessible to the Minnesota duty officer and to local first responders. DPS intends to gather information from railroad pipeline companies regarding resources and their contractors' resources to populate this database. We will develop a set of categories for response equipment and resources to ensure consistency. And in fact, the Department of Public Safety has scheduled a meeting with the pipeline companies in Minnesota next month, Mr. Fire Marshal? Mm-hmm. Next month, as a first step in gathering that information about the resources that they have across the state of Minnesota. As an interim step, while the database is being developed, DPS intends to direct HSEM to compile the information regarding private sector resources and provide it to local governments on a secure network to aid local first responders in their planning efforts. If it's not feasible to utilize existing systems, DPS will work with the Minnesota Geospatial Information Office, other agency partners, and private sector advisors to develop mapping and database capabilities to determine what funding may be needed to support the database development and maintenance. And finally, recommendation number 6, establish standards for pipeline preparedness and response. For local and state government to be able to determine what resources may be needed to develop response capacity to an oil transportation incident, it will be necessary to determine if rail and pipeline companies are adequately prepared to respond. The most concrete ways to evaluate preparedness are to examine an organization's written plan against established criteria and to test the organization's preparedness through exercises and drills. The new requirements for rail companies will allow the state to examine rail preparedness efforts, but pipeline companies do not have similarly well-defined responsibilities. Pipelines also transport significant quantities of potentially dangerous material in Minnesota, so additional attention to pipeline preparedness is warranted. DPS recommends that the state adopt response standards, including timelines, for pipeline companies that are similar in scope and content to the response standards applicable for railroads. DPS has not, however, developed a position regarding the appropriate response time for pipeline companies, but will indeed participate in the legislative process as required to make that happen. Mr. Chair, that is our overview. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Donaski. Question for Senator Peterson, then Senator Kiffmeyer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a number of your comments here, it seems that the pipelines and railroads are kind of lumped together into the same category, and to me anyway, you know, I view them as quite differently because you know, I've had a chance to tour a pipeline pump station and been quite impressed actually by the enforcement and or self-enforcement that they really do. In fact, many of the safety standards we asked about were significantly lower for individual companies than even the state and federal standards for spills, for example. They had a policy that was significantly less in terms of reporting that spill and that type of thing. So, from my perspective, I have a little bit of concern that these two are kind of being lumped together. Are they regulated by different? I think I'm aware of the Office of Pipeline Safety, but so my question is: are pipelines regulated by somebody else, and then the railroad by another office, or are they kind of being lumped together?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, because they both transport oil, they do tend to get lumped together. In our world, they are not. In fact, the last recommendation we just made, we didn't make the recommendation that the timelines or the responses be the same as the railroads, but rather to study and find out what the differences are and what would be reasonable for the pipelines, what the expectations should be for the pipelines. The second portion of your question regarding the regulation of the railroads, the Department of Public Safety has very little to do with the regulation of the railroads. That falls under the Department of Transportation by in large part. The Office of Pipeline Safety, which is housed within the State Fire Marshal's Division, works with the pipelines.
Okay, thanks. So if I could follow up, Mr. West, is there a problem? Do you see a problem with the Office of Pipeline Safety and their ability to make sure our pipelines are safe right now? And, it seems to me we're moving in a direction here where you think more regulation is needed, and I haven't been shown that based on the tours I've seen, but I may be wrong. What's your initial reaction?
Senator Peterson, I'll just remind you of the major incident we just had in Yellowstone. So it's not like pipelines are benign. These things happen, and there's a role for the public to have their interests tended to, and not simply rely on the private initiative of the pipelines themselves.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I think if the Minnesotans and our Office of Pipeline Safety may have well prevented a spill like we saw in Yellowstone, and that's what I'm trying to get a sense for, we have not had that type of incident in Minnesota, and I think there's a reason.
Well, Senator Peterson, we certainly have had some major spills in Minnesota from pipelines. Fire Marshal West.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, you know, the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety, we are out investigating any spills that are reported to our office. We go through the Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration as far as our federal guidelines. We, you know, our inspectors are out there working with the different either the gaseous or the oil transportation, you know, the liquid transportation companies when it comes to our inspection and our investigation throughout the state of Minnesota.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
So, Mr. West, who pays for when there's an incident, as Senator Dibble just described, who pays for that bill, so to speak?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it is the responsible party's responsibility for paying any of the cleanup costs, response costs, anytime that there is a spill or a leak throughout the state of Minnesota. And our staff will be on scene, and they will be monitoring the cleanup, monitoring, or I should say the repairs along the way. And then, you know, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is also involved if there's an environmental issue. But our staff will be out there during that repair, during the investigation on any spill or leak around the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a couple things, and I appreciate what Senator Peterson talked about. I was wondering, too. Three things. Number one, is it possible to divide it out a little bit more so we can kind of better get a better idea between those two? My second one is in regards to first responders, and I'm a little concerned there because they're first responders. So some of the folks that are on the scene first, and I saw some of your recommendations. That was good, too, but just a little concerning there. And then the last one is it says elected officials indicated that constituents may not view preparedness for a possible oil transportation incident as a significant issue. Well, I'm an elected official, and in my district, they absolutely do share with me and has come up. But then Sherburn County, all the way through, it's high-density population areas connected by farming ag areas. So they are well aware of this issue and have communicated that to me. So I just wanted to state that so that it wasn't construed that somehow this was all elected officials, because I don't think in our area that's the case at all. But so in regards to the first responders, your recommendation, you feel that I thought it was very good that you do a regional approach and the collaboration. That's great. But I didn't feel like I had a real good sense of your focus on first responders from what I read here and what you said. Could you maybe add some more details in regards to that?
Mr. Donaski or
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kelly.
Senator, I'll take a stab at it. First responders are critical in this report, and they are fundamentally, when we're talking about preparedness, how do our first responders respond? How do they stay safe? How do we keep our communities safe? What the report tried to do is build upon the current capabilities where we are now, and then gave some recommendations to suggestions about how we could expand the capabilities. One of the things that the report pointed out, that a significant number of the first responders, while we have an all-hazards approach, while we have a lot of cooperative agreements in the state, that they really weren't aware of the oil issues that are surrounding it. So what we've done is we've started out at that low level by going out and doing our familiarization training, trying to explain to people, trying to explain to first responders and the elected officials what we're dealing with here, so that they can start to decide, okay, if that's what's going through our communities, mm-hmm. what do we as a local community want to do to either prevent, to mitigate, or to prepare to respond to that? As we move through that process, then, we'll continue to roll out higher levels of training that go further, and then we'll take that information and we'll start to develop those exercises and those protocols that I discussed with the chair just a few moments ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I get a better understanding of this phase was more of an assessment than, and you're instituting the making progress. So, and looking forward to the 2017 report, we'll probably see a lot more detail and depth and improvement in that regard. What about the separation out of that issue? Even though it's oil transported two different ways, is that sufficient then?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll take another stab at that again. Again, the report was based on trying to determine the current capabilities and how we build the capacity in the state of Minnesota to respond. Last year's legislation put protocols on the railroads and response times and gave specific responsibilities. And so as we go to the railroads and we ask them for their plans, what are you going to do? We can test those plans against what specifically their responsibilities are and their timelines are within legislation specifically stated here. Those aren't on the pipeline side to the same extent. Mm-hmm. So while the pipelines, the senator's point, do a very good job, and we've had very good cooperation and collaboration with the pipeline companies, when we start talking about how do we assess the capabilities in Minnesota, by not having some baseline criteria to determine what we should test them against, it's difficult for us to determine whether we're succeeding or not succeeding in our preparedness efforts. Does that make sense, Senator? I'm sorry.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that additional explanation was very helpful. Thank you.
Great. Other questions? Thanks. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I should just follow up on that, your comment there. And first of all, thank you for your work. It's certainly valuable to the work, and I know most Minnesotans appreciate the effort you're putting into this. Most Minnesotans don't think about it a lot, of, quite frankly, because of the work you're doing, which is probably the goal and where we should be. But so what steps would you take, for example, if you had an organization that was not cooperating, you know, with their written plan? And then my understanding is, or last I heard, anyone, when I went on a tour, they had to do annual practice events of if they did have a spill, they had to practice that on an annual basis, and I think every few years they had to do a larger scale practice. What steps would the office, your office, take if you had a company that was not cooperating in your eyes?
Mr. Dinesk.
Mr. Chair, that's a good question, Senator. I guess it depends on how the legislation is drafted as to what the requirements are and what the consequences would be to that. Just to give you an example, sir, under the hazardous liquid pipeline response timelines, and this is referring under 49 CFR Part 195, which is the federal guidelines that the pipelines operate under, when they have a response, what the timeline calls for the pipelines is prompt. So there's nothing that says on the safety side of it, there's nothing that says 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, 60 hours, promptly and effectively, I think. Is that what it says?
Yes.
Promptly and effectively. And so while we recognize that the pipelines do a very good job and they're very responsible, having the idea that prompt is rather vague in nature, having some metrics that are a little more specific would be helpful for us in the state of Minnesota from the Department of Public Safety standpoint in measuring how ready we are. Are we meeting the criteria that we collectively, the legislature and the department, have established for these agencies to be able to meet their public safety needs?
Okay, thank you.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to see this report. Thank you for your work on it. I do have a question, though. It looks like one of your first recommendation that we need to work on the awareness. I have a question on the recommendation number 3. Can you explain a little bit more about why we need the delay and why we would need to do something like that for preparedness? You just want to wait for the report, or you want to wait? What is it that you were waiting for?
Mr. Chair, I'm pulling up number 3.
Delay significant changes.
Mr. Chair?
Senator, Mr. Donaski.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the legislation passed in 2014 assessed the railroads and pipeline companies $2.5 million annually for the next 3 years, and there was a general revenue appropriation to the Department of Public Safety of $1.5 million. We're 6 months into that process now, and just getting out our initial training. We've conducted a little over 30 training sessions. We have 40 more on task. But when we look at that funding out, as we look at that funding going forward, we just don't know what we would spend it on yet because we haven't fully developed the idea of what we're going to spend it on. Going back to the regional concept and really relying on local emergency managers for their feedback as to what they need in terms of training, what they think they need in terms of equipment, we just feel that we'd be better off downstream a little bit, a couple years, coming back with that 2017 report, assessing how well we've done, and then getting greater feedback as to what the needs are for local public responders.
Okay, so you just want to get a more accurate understanding of how much funding you're going to need to meet.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Donesk.
I guess I should, when you say changes, what are the significant changes that you don't want us to do?
Mr. Chair.
Donesk.
Secretary, or Senator, I'm sorry. I think the changes that we're referring to in here are just changes in the assessment and changes in that process we have for receiving that funding.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So, Mr. Danowski, so would that recommendation flow into the, I guess, well, I was looking at the previous recommendation, which is talking about connecting funding for training and equipment to regional coordination, and then you have ideas around developing a process to apply for training and equipment, encouraging these regional joint powers or consortiums or collaborations, then setting up a criteria, a set of priorities for doing some funding to local emergency responders, hierarchy of training, planning and coordination, equipment that these agencies would need. So is the idea to pause, do more of this analysis and assessment, develop a process by which locals can apply for the kind of funding they might need to train themselves, get themselves as ready as they possibly can? And a corollary to that question is, would you be looking to the legislature to establish an entity or a mechanism, help set those priorities for that funding along this outline?
Mr. Chair, very good questions. I would hesitate to use the word pause because I think that we're actually picking up speed as we move forward. As this report came out, it has given us some specific directions where we can enhance what we're already doing. As you mentioned, regionalized training approach, putting together templates and models for ways that we can do this, and in kind of encompassing it in our already effective all-hazard approach to emergency management in the state. And then as we move along and do these things, having those conversations with the first responders and with the experts in the field, taking note along the way as to what we think we should be looking for downstream and in the future. The additional thing that I point out, Mr. Chair, is that as we come forward, one of the other things the report does point out is the need for sustainability in this program. So while we have made the recommendation now that we hold the funding where it is, I suspect that when the report comes in 2017, there will be recommendations for sustaining whatever level of training that we've developed and we've gone out there to keep it at that level.
And I was only referring to pausing on legislative activity and action, making some, you know, specific legislative policy changes. I know you're doing great work and want to continue to do great work on really getting some good data into the House and figuring out what to do with that. Other questions, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask Senator Peterson if he got his question answered about combining the pipeline safety and railroad, because I don't know if I heard the answer. Did you get your question answered?
Yeah,
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think I did, Senator Tomassoni. And I could rephrase what I thought I heard is that, you know, clearly there's an Office of Pipeline Safety that handles pipelines, and then the railroad issue is handled more by the Department of Transportation. And so, you know, I think there is a separation there. And then I guess the third thing I heard is the Pollution Control Agency would come in, and I'm sure even the EPA, if some type of accident gets to a certain level, would be another agency we'd see. Is that accurate, Mr. Kelly or Mr. Danowski? I guess you answered the question originally. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's very close. I don't think that we clump the railroads and the pipeline companies together. They're different. They both transport hazardous materials, including oil, but how they transport them, their vulnerabilities and risks associated with them are inherently different because they are different modes of transportation. However, when it comes to the report, and again, we're not making a determination on one's better, one's good, one's worse. What the report is trying to do is create the process for the state of Minnesota, for the Department of Public Safety, to determine how prepared we are to respond in case there is an incident with the pipeline or in case there is an incident with the railroad. And so on the pipeline side, the recommendation is just that we have some criteria that which we can gauge our capacity against that.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Thomas.
So the report isn't recommending that the two end up under the same authority. The report is just reporting how to take care of a spilling, regardless of whether it's a pipeline or a rail car, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, there's no recommendation that they come under one
okay.
title.
Great. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a couple of questions, and one that was spurred by an answer to one of Senator Peterson's questions. So working in a regulated industry, we often have to provide our procedures to the overseeing body. Do you get safety procedures? Do you have the ability to review those and comment on those from the pipelines and the railroads?
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to the Fire Marshal.
Mr. Chair, Senator, on the pipeline side, under the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety, on the compliance side, which is what we do, when our inspectors are out there inspecting, we will review the pipelines plan. They're planned for their response plan. And so that is one of the things that we'll do when we're out on inspection. So we will review their response plan to make sure it's in compliance. We go through the federal guideline with the PHMSA, the Pipeline and Hazardous Safety Administration. And so when our inspectors are out on site, they will review the response plan.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. West, then, do you feel like you've got the authority to question some of those if you have concerns, or have you ever seen any concerns or raised any concerns with what you've seen and made recommendations?
Mr. Chair, Senator, there's no doubt that our inspectors, when they're there, if they review and they have a concern on that response plan, they'll raise that to our office, to our chief engineer. We'll review that with PHMSA if there's some changes that need to be made and make those recommendations.
And have you found any?
To be honest, that would, Mr. Chair, Senator, that would be a question I would have to ask our chief engineer, because he's involved in that day-to-day with the inspectors. And if we found any of those that we've had to make that recommendation, and that would be, I could have our chief engineer respond to your question, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
If you like. Mr. Chair, that's up to you. He's here today, so I could have John respond to that.
All right. So did you need Senator Pratt to restate the question?
I think I got it, Mr. Chair. All right. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is John Wolfgram. I'm the Chief Engineer with the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety. I think perhaps maybe a little bit of clarification might be helpful to Senator Peterson's question and Senator Pratt's question. We have a number of different regulations that deal with this idea of response and responding to a spill, the first being the safety regulations. We have safety regulations and we have environmental regulations. We have some of these kind of cross and can be kind of a gray area. As Senator Deputy Commissioner Danaski shared, on the safety side of the regulations, the pipeline operators are required to have a prompt and effective response. And the safety regulations are what the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety, we will look at their emergency response plan to make sure that, you know, if they have some type of fire or some kind of incident, we're going out and looking at those plans. We also have the environmental side of things where, say there's a rupture similar to the Yellowstone event where, now that there's product out in the river, getting boom deployed and things like that, the pipeline companies are required to have a spill response plan. The spill response plan gets submitted to the Pipeline Hazardous Safety Administration, or PHMSA, for review and approval. Portions of those are reviewed by our inspectors. To my knowledge, within the last few years, there has not been any non-compliance issues noted on these response plans.
Thank you.
All right.
Maybe just one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. So as we talked about ambiguity in the regulation of being prompt, your office then has the ability to look at a procedure, a response plan, and determine whether or not prompt has been met, or recommend some more specific or urgent timing on that.
Mr. Wolfgram.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have two different types of pipelines that are in the state. We have interstate pipelines. Those are basically pipelines that cross state borders that are transporting product. In the state of Minnesota, we act as an interstate agent on behalf of PHMSA, where we conduct inspections on those lines. Essentially, we're ensuring compliance with federal regulations. So if there was a non-compliance noted, we would report that back to PHMSA. PHMSA has the ultimate say of what's prompt and what's not prompt. As these are federal safety regulations, as a state, we're preempted essentially from creating more stringent requirements. We also have oversight of those intrastate pipelines, so basically a pipeline that would start and end in our state. We have a little bit more latitude there of how the enforcement process would work.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By your recommendation number four, you're talking about doing preparedness activities, establishing timelines and measures, ensuring progress towards those results for first responders. And then in recommendation number six, you're indicating that we should do that for pipelines as well. Do you have the ability now to see the standards and timelines that are currently in place for the pipelines as from your aspect when it comes to first responders? If they're available, can you just not see them? Or if they're already set in place?
Senator, see what?
The time, because in number four, we're saying we should set activities, timelines when it comes to first responders to make sure we're prepared. Mm-hmm. And that's what this report is about. Okay. And then in recommendation number six, you're saying that we should also adopt some standards, timelines, pipeline companies. But what I'm hearing is that they're already in place. That's the indication from the Office of Pipeline Safety. Do we just not have access to them, or do you not have access to them as a department?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Donaski.
I think number four is going a bit beyond what number six is speaking specifically about as a pipelines and establishing criteria so that we can measure ourselves against planning. Number four really talks in larger scope about developing plans and timelines for locals to respond and how we're going to have plans that are set up for response across the board, not just the private entities themselves.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jensen.
So it would be important for first responders to be able to understand that, and you as a department for pipelines as well.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, could you, the last part of your question, the door just closed.
So it would be important to do that type of thing for pipelines as well, from a first responder. Does the Office of Pipeline Safety interact with first responders, provide training, do any of that?
I think I'm going to take a stab at this initially. Is it not true, Mr. Donaski, that some of the onus of response is on the companies themselves, and some of this speaks to what companies have to do, whether it's a pipeline company when a spill occurs or a railroad company when a spill occurs. They have to be at the ready to deploy personnel and response equipment. Is that part of what we're speaking to? And then, of course, notifying first responders, you know, to get there to do what they, the aspects and responsibilities that they have to carry out on site as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator, Mr. Chair, I think you've kind of hit it, one of the topics you're right on the head. We have a very good first responder system. We have a very good all-hazard response system. By and large, the railroads and pipelines do a very good job on their safety. But to some extent, they've been operating in silos. And so part of what this report is saying is that we should have a more comprehensive look at this, talking to the pipelines and the railroads, determining what they have, where they have it, what their plans are for response, and making sure that we integrate that with our all-hazards regional response processes. In some cases, we have pipelines that are working very close with a specific fire department or a specific community, when in reality, if there's a pipeline incident, it's probably going to be a multi-jurisdictional piece. And so what we want to do is we want to bring in the jurisdictions that would, in fact, respond to that so that they're all aware of that. So when we talk about the timelines and plans, what we're talking about is just trying to get everybody kind of on the same page here so we're all talking to each other about should the forbidden thing happen, that we all have a plan in place someplace that's not in the middle of the night, and now's the time to start flying on the cuff to decide how we're going to respond to this. We practice this, we've exercised it, we've critiqued it, and we have a plan in place to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, yeah. Thank you. Anything further, members? All right. So I appreciate your work. This is an excellent document. Gives us some good information about our status of things at present, and what we might do in the future in terms of allocating resources, establishing policies, so we continue to support your work with local jurisdictions as well as the railroads and the pipeline companies. So let's continue to have this conversation. Anything that we might need to work on this year, we should talk about soon, and things that we should be keeping our eye on as we move into subsequent years. Let's continue to have that dialogue. Anything further, members? Nope. Any meeting Monday. Okay. Ports and airports are going to hear specifically about Duluth in particular as well. I know Senator Reiner had some interest in bringing some folks down from Duluth to talk about their airport as well as their water port. Interesting stuff happening there. With that, we are adjourned.